the clinking of coffee cups and the background noise of a Nero's. The Nero's bolted onto the side of a BBC new broadcasting house because this was the most convenient place for myself and Jim Killick, executive director of the Open Rights Group, to meet. It's lovely to meet you.
And you too.
We've been discussing a number of things before I clicked record on here. But one thing I wanted to get kind of more info on from you was the kind of state of play at the moment when it comes to the Snoopers Charter and the fact we're approaching a general election and nobody seems to know what the hell is going on. Both individuals, please explain the Snoopers Charter, and politicians who have to make decisions on stuff they know nothing about.
Okay, so the Snoopers Charter is a plan to harvest as much information as possible from the internet about every citizen in the UK, to strip it of content and to keep a record of who has talked to whom, when and how. And then to use that for profiling to work out clusters of people, potential criminals, do all kinds of things for law enforcement. Now, this is already actually happening in many ways at GCHQ. In relation to terrorists, has not been through Parliament. Parliament's not voted on it. Nobody has had any public debate about that. But now Theresa May is pushing for the same to happen for the police, which to my mind is just outrageous.
Surely, as he dons his a general member of the public hat, surely if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear of all this information being found out.
Well, I mean, you could ask that to Doreen Lawrence. You could ask that to the Sun journalists who found their contacts and sources being found by the police. You should ask yourself, are you ever in your life going to want to discuss something privately with a lawyer, a journalist, or somebody from the medical profession? You know, and if you think you are and you don't want that to be in the full face of the law when you have those conversations, then probably at some point you do have something to hide and you do have something, if not to fear, then at risk.
One of the things that concerns me was the fact that we think about this as giving our information to the government, but more often than not, it's not the government. It's a private body, a corporate entity working on behalf of the government, or it might be in the not too distant future. So this number of people that has access to this kind of information, as Snowden did have access as a contractor to no end of stuff over in the States, it surely has no kind of ceiling when we think about how, okay, my medical records are safe now in the vaults, the very highly cryptographic, no doubt, please don't break cryptography, vaults of the NHS, but surely that won't go to a private contractor who gets a kickback from the insurance firms or anything like what's happening to CCTV now going to private organisations.
Yeah, I mean, once your data is collected, then it's very hard to control the risk. And that's one reason why collecting metadata in this kind of way is an unfair thing to impose on people who are not guilty of something and not under suspicion. I mean, collecting information about somebody that you are genuinely concerned about is one thing, but to decide to do that for everybody with all of the attendant risks of reuse, commercial use, leaking, all of that, you know, that is not a fair risk to put on people.
Tell me roughly what would happen should, I mean, encryption and methods of speaking in an end-to-end encrypted kind of way is being demonised somewhat at the moment, because obviously terrorism didn't exist before we had encryption, and encryption has enabled and nurtured, like an incubator, evil doers to do evil in private or in secret. What would happen if we even begin to tamper with how cryptographic communications work? Because part of my brain is saying there'd be a certain collapse in society.
Yeah, I think the potentially would. I think the first thing we have to remember is that cryptography is mathematics, it's software, it's developed in the open as well as by companies, and it won't go away. I mean, just because David Cameron says he doesn't want the bad people to use cryptography doesn't mean that they won't continue to use it. Doesn't mean that innocent people who are concerned about their privacy won't develop the tools. So this supposed war on encryption, I think, it's a huge misnomer. And actually, what Cameron, I think, is after is greater cooperation from service developers. What he wants is for commonly used services that are providing privacy to their users to have ways into that information in the way that we believe that Microsoft gave access to the American Secret Services for Skype, for instance. Skype enables the recording of people despite being an apparently peer-to-peer encrypted communications platform. He wants other services to do that. Now, they may have their reasons, but what that potentially does is it undermines the market value of all of those services who are providing legitimate tools to businesses and individuals who need their privacy, their business security on an everyday level. Where you end up is that the people who just simply don't trust things, need their security for reasons of, for instance, terrorism, organized crime, they will just use services that they can trust as opposed to the ones they know have been backdoored. So it seems to me that it's a very bad kind of policy, and I think it's almost certainly being pushed by the likes of the NSA and GCHQ, who simply want more data. They are data addicts. You know, the last few years, their ability to strip cables of vast amounts of information, their ability to get into the back of Google, Yahoo and other people and just put huge amounts of data into vast vaults and analyze it, they have become hungrier and hungrier for more and more information. They believe that they are getting some kind of omniscience from this. They believe in the power of information to cement their power within the secret state and the state itself. That in itself should worry us, but my strong advice to politicians is don't feed addicts.
I can just picture them lying there fat and as they gluttonized, made up word there, you know, gorging themselves on fat pipes of data day in, day out. And some, you know, as a person connected to the internet, you know, offer me a faster connection and I'll lap it up with the rest of them. But for me, tell me, what's potentially wrong with giving a sneaky little back door into a few, playing devil's advocate here, a few platforms and systems, and saying to the government, here's the keys, please don't let anybody else have them?
Well, I think it does depend on what the technological solution is, how dangerous this is. But if you genuinely put easy backdoors into encryption as a whole, or widely used encryption techniques, then you do put people at extreme risk, because you're effectively leaving that secret to be discovered by other secret services, criminals of all kinds, and sooner or later one or other of them will find it, because it's only a question of how valuable the information is that is stopping, you know, deciding whether they break it or not. You know, there's a problem, it's a certain amount hard to solve, so the question is it worth solving the problem that gets you into the data? And if the data is valuable, then you'll put the resources in to break your way in.
Now, I can tell just by sitting this close to you, you're not Gandhi, and you don't necessarily have the answers to the world's problems, but I'm going to ask you a big question here. What would happen if governments had unrestricted 100% access to all the world's knowledge and information? Would that eradicate terrorism? Would that make the world a safer, better place?
It wouldn't eradicate terrorism, but what it would do is create the possibilities for abuse of your personal circumstances from minute to minute. I don't think you can trust the secret services, particularly with people's information, not on a blanket level. These are people who shot people. They're people who have, investigated people wrongly, bullied, blackmailed, ruined people's lives. They do these things as part of their everyday job. You have to be extremely careful of the security services, because they're always going to have a certain belief that the ends protecting the state justify the means destroying people's lives. You have to keep them under strict control. They're not people who can automatically be trusted. All of that said, you know, what else can the state do? You know, it can decide your education should be limited. It can decide that your healthcare is too expensive to give it you. There are a huge number of decisions that the government can take. And the more information they have about people, the more justified they're going to feel in deciding that maybe you've smoked too much and maybe you don't deserve that free healthcare. You know, there are lots of decisions they can start making once they know things about you, which are going to be very hard to stop. And I think you have to have some degree of privacy so that people are treated equally, and you don't expect the state to start making very fine graded and apparently justified judgments about people.
So you've painted this lovely picture now of an amalgamation between Brave New World and the book 1984, which we're all very familiar with, these dystopian possible futures. There are answers, and there are things we can do, though, aren't there? Give me a couple of ideas so that we can leave with fire in our bellies.
Well, look, you know, I mean, we've got this extraordinary thing over the next few months. We'll start an election where one of the parties has pledged to put you all under greater surveillance. You know, that is Theresa May's promise to you. She wants you to have the snooper's charter, to have all your information gathered up. And we also know the Conservative Party are pledging to roll back or limit your ability to sort these things out through human rights claims. Now, I'm certainly not saying that you should never vote for a Conservative. If you live, you know, David Davis is somebody I would vote for instance. But I think you should look very carefully at your candidates, whatever party they come from, and ask where they come from on surveillance. You know, are they for more of this, or are they for restraining these services and putting them under democratic, legitimate control to ensure that abuses don't occur? Because at the moment, I don't think there is sufficient control, and we should all be convinced of that post-Snowden. We shouldn't be asking for more powers for these people at a point where they don't seem to be properly restrained. So that's a really big thing you can do. You can talk to your candidates, you can decide who to vote for and explain to people who you're going to vote for on the basis of keeping your basic constitutional rights. The second thing you can do is, yes, use encryption. Use tools that you trust. Use companies who give you privacy. There is a big market shift, particularly in the States, around this right now. You know, these tools are being developed. We need to show that there's a market for it and that people value their privacy enough to use tools that actually help them preserve their privacy.
I'm interested that you haven't actually plugged some of the great work that you do, and I appreciate that, because, I mean, but I do, you know, give a small amount of money every month to the Open Rights Group, and I wouldn't be even a fraction, you know, clued up as I feel I am in some of these issues, even though they can be very deep. You do have a way of explaining them simply. Where can people go if they want to know more about the Open Rights Group?
Yeah, so do join. Do go to openrightsgroup.org and do join as a supporter, because we do rely on those donations to run campaigns like the election work we will be doing in the next 3 or 4 months. We're asking actually at the moment for 300 people to join so that we can do that election work and put pressure on the parties after the election. I think we've got a big hope of some reform after the election, actually, particularly if it does result in a hung parliament and the parties have to negotiate about what it is that they get through. So help us to do that work, as well as taking part yourself. Go to openrightsgroup.org and join today.
Jim, thanks very much.
Thank you.